Hi, this is Candace Michelle, and you're listening to KCIW, your community radio station. You know, we're in the midst of a pretty strange time. For most, probably all of us, our lives have been severely disrupted. The economy is in tatters, and the acrimony between the left and the right has become so intense that civility and empathy seem to no longer have a place in our interactions with each other. The great divide between us and them seems to just keep growing wider, fueled by anger and fear on both sides. The logical result is a community further divided, further alienated from anyone not in our own tribe, and increasingly fragile. We're each convinced that our perception of reality is the truth, and therefore anyone who doesn't share it is just plain wrong. But like a giant beach ball made up of unlimited slices of color, what you see all depends on where you're standing. My hope is that this show can help all of us see the other colors by first being willing to entertain the possibility that they exist and learn that there might be some worth in listening to a perspective different than our own. I believe that willingness to include all of us in the discussion will lead to a stronger, more resilient community, something we all want and need. Please join me for my conversations with Brookings Mayor Jake Pieper, a new series called Building Bridges. Hi, I'm Candace Michelle, and welcome to our new series, Building Bridges. Our intention with this show is to try and bridge some of the issues in our community that have grown so divisive that folks are having a hard time even having civil conversations with each other. In the best of times, that level of anger and suspicion toward our neighbors is unhealthy and works to weaken the fabric of the community. And this is hardly the best of times. The emergence of COVID-19 and the resulting pandemic has not only claimed the lives of over 700,000 people worldwide, over 157,000 of them right here in our own country, but it's also sent our economy into a tailspin that will probably impact us for years to come. But even before COVID, our community had some big challenges. Now, I'm joined by Mayor Jake Pieper as we look at some of those issues. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Candace. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
I am hearing that your intro, 750,000 lives worldwide, huh, to COVID.
700,000.
700,000.
Yes, 700,000 lives have been lost, right?
Crazy.
I know. I know. 18 million people have been infected. It's like, you know, and I do those numbers every night for the radio station. I record it and so that we can run it the next day. And every night I am astounded. You know, the number of cases are jumping by 200, 300,000 a day worldwide. Mm-hmm. The deaths in America are jumping by like 1,000 a day just here with our own American citizens. It's hard to fathom it. It's just really hard to fathom it.
So when did the clock kind of start with those deaths? So 700,000 worldwide, did it start in late April?
Well, it had to have, I'm thinking it started with China, don't you think? When China started.
Right.
I mean, I don't know that we've ever gotten really accurate numbers from China, but.
Probably not.
I think as soon as they knew it was a pandemic. So I don't know. I suppose there's a way to find out, but I would think that as soon as they knew that we were dealing with a pandemic, which I think that was late January-ish.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's a great deal of people in a matter of months to die.
And when you think about that, you know, I mean, that's a lot of souls that have departed this realm. That's
right.
A lot. I mean, I remember thinking during 9/11 that was a lot of people that died, boom, died.
Yeah.
This is way worse. I mean,
Well, and if you ponder, if you wind the clock out another 6 months, you know,
I know
what the numbers could look like. That's crazy.
It's frightening, really, you know, and when you factor in the fact that we're going into fall, which means we are going into regular flu season and what all of that entails, it's, and, you know, trying to have school.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, let's send the kids back into the classroom.
Yeah.
Great idea. I know. It's like, and they evidently, they've done some studies, and evidently kids are great little carriers. They don't get sick. Very, very few of them actually get sick, but they're great little carriers. They bring it home and give it to mom and dad and Aunt Mary and grandma. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, wow.
Yeah. Well, just set COVID aside for a second. Any illness that has ever come into my household, my kids aren't in public school, but it comes from them hanging out with other kids, you know.
I know. I know. Inevitably, my grandson always, before this year, which probably won't happen, but my grandson always comes down for Christmas. And inevitably, Phil and I are sick as dogs by the time they leave, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we were perfectly healthy before the little monster came in.
I know,
And now we're sick, right?
Yeah.
And of course, with us, because we're in our 70s, you know, the sickness goes, well, it stays around for a while before it goes away. You know, it's, it doesn't just kind of leave the next day. It's around for 3 weeks or something. Like, oh, great.
Wow.
I know.
Well, I know that wasn't the topic. I just, when you mentioned that 700,000 number, it, you know, just.
No, I know.
Gave me a wow moment.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking. Well, I just want to, you know, bring people up to date. During our last show, we talked a little bit about your personal history, your family, your service in local government. And for our listeners who didn't catch that, they can find the podcast on the KCIW website, kciw.org, under Programs, Building Bridges. We also talked a little bit about the importance of building bridges. And I don't know if we talked about why that seems to be so hard to do, but do you have any thoughts about that? Because doesn't it seem like it's really hard
to do
that?
Yeah. Well, one thing that I've become increasingly aware of, in my ripe old age of 37 is,
I'm sorry to laugh. Yeah, okay.
I know. That's why I say it like that, right?
Yeah, I know.
Even, you know, so we're the human race, we've accomplished so many things, but we still really suck at communicating and communicating with each other properly. We really lack a lot of communication skills that most of us believe that we have. And so starting from a place of poor communication, which would obviously lend itself to, you know, issues of contradiction and issues of gaps.
Right.
And then so as far as building, you know, trying to build the bridge, that is incredibly difficult. And especially if we all believe in what we believe and think that we have it figured out and everyone else needs to learn except for me because I have it figured out. It's tough to, you can't really meet somebody, you know, you can't come out and meet someone in that position if you already know everything. So,
right.
That's a deal. That's definitely a deal.
Well, so how do you think that that inability to communicate, how can that be dealt with? I mean, is that something that happens in school? Is that something, I mean, how do we get better at that?
Well, the best I've found so far is that it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time with someone, and it takes time. So if we were trying, our frame of reference and this conversation is kind of around political ideals and community things. And I've found that for me to communicate well with Candace Michelle on a political topic, we need to have already spent some time communicating and chatting about things on a more personal level, and actually, you know, develop a relationship outside of those political topics, and have that already built, and then we can dive into things that are stickier. So that's the best luck I've had with people.
No, I think you're right. I think it's, you know, if you have a personal connection with somebody, you are less likely to jump down their throat when they say something that you don't agree with. You're more apt to extend a little bit of grace, which is a word that I've heard you use many times.
So
I assume that what you mean by that, by extending grace, is that you kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. Is that what that means?
Well, so benefit of the doubt is something that seems kind of non-existent anymore with people. Grace definitely plays into that, but grace is an unmerited favor. So it's you know, showing someone grace even though they don't deserve grace. That's the deal. So even though you've wronged me, and therefore you know, I am right, or I have the right to wrong you because I've been wronged, and that the accounting of that and the reckoning of that, grace needs to come over top of that. And yes, you have wronged me, but I'm going to extend something that you don't necessarily deserve, and I'm going to come back and try to build that bridge again. And I guess wronged might not be the right, isn't really the right terminology there, but
it feels that way. If you're on the receiving end, it feels like you've been wronged,
sure,
right?
Sure.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's true that if you can walk over to the other side where that person who wronged you is and understand their perspective, it's very, very seldom that it turns out that it actually is a wrong. It's
right.
Just a difference in perception.
Yeah. Rarely does it turn out that the wrong that you felt, rarely does it turn out that that's really accurate when you get into it and you chat with somebody about it and you really, you know, get all the cards on the table.
Yeah.
It turns out that, you know, your perception and how you receive the communication from that other person is faulty, you know? So.
And it is all you have, actually. I mean, those are the tools that you have in your tool belt, right? It's your experiences are what they are because of what you've gone through in life. So your perception of even words and what words mean is going to get filtered through
absolutely.
Your past experiences.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
You know, yeah, if you've had a really bad experience with a dog and somebody's talking about their dog that they love to bits and everything else, you're not going to have warm fuzzies about
right.
that conversation.
Right.
You're going to remember being bit or you
yep.
know, whatever.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
Yeah. I know.
And it's, you know, so we enter the stage, we come to the table with, in reality, poor communication skills. And for whatever reason, it seems like we all lack that ability to give benefit of any doubt, you know, to extend someone the benefit of doubt. that has, it's definitely not my experience in government. Government, we don't get benefit of doubt ever, mm-hmm. really, mm-hmm. you know?
No, of course not. Yeah, it feels like it's gotten a lot worse lately. And it could have something to do with social media, because certainly if you're on Facebook, for instance, you can't read somebody's facial expressions because you can't see them, right? You can't hear the tone in what their communication is. So you don't know if they're being funny or serious or facetious or sarcastic. I mean, you just don't know. And it's, people take umbrage like immediately and fly off the handle, just flying.
Yeah. Even in the best case scenario, we're sitting across the table and we can see each other and we can see all those things that you can't see in typed, you know, communication. Right. Even with that, it's amazing still how incorrect our perceptions are of what someone is saying to us. And this has been an incredibly interesting thing to me in my time of government. So it's not too often unless you're in government. If I say something to a friend, I don't hear 50 people's opinion of what I said and how it was interpreted. And so most of us don't really ever get that kind of feedback. Well, in something like a public setting, a public meeting in government, discussions can happen and I do, in fact, see 50 or 100 people's interpretation of what was said and how someone meant something or, you know, whatever. They were joking, they were upset, they were happy, they were sad. And it's amazing to me some of the things that I hear and how inaccurate they are. And so then I've got to come to the realization that, well, one, I'm either just different than everyone else. And for some reason, I just have this uncanny ability to perceive everything correctly, or I'm just like everybody else.
That's definitely you.
Yeah. You know, or I'm just like everybody else and I've got serious shortcomings in my perceptions.
And maybe not really able to do anything more than just check in with the person, right? Because mm-hmm. it's not like you realize that you are not hearing things the way somebody is meaning them, and then you can automatically just change your filter, because you can't. You know, your filter stays your filter. So I guess the next best thing is to kind of check in with somebody and say, okay, this is what I think you just said. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
And, you know, but again, it's pretty darn time consuming. And we generally don't take that kind of time and effort with communication.
Correct.
We're spitballing it all the time, right?
Yep. Just fast and furious, you know, fast and furious.
And then I agree. Because we assume motivation, right? Which is another thing. It's like, really, I don't think I am actually inside your brain. Right. I'm not sure I do really know your motivation. But, you know, if you say something in a certain way, I am going to say, no, you were doing it to be mean, you know? It's like, wow, really?
Yeah, really? I know. We definitely, all of us, it seems, we just take great liberty in our mind reading ability, you know, and we just think that we know that by me looking at you and talking to you, I can actually tell your motives, you know, and obviously that's silly. It's silly.
Well, it's silly when you say it out loud. But we do it all the time.
All the time.
You know, we we read that raised eyebrow, you know, or that kind of half smile, and we read it as a smirk, by God, you know.
Yeah. Oh, like, yeah.
They were smirking at me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And it, you know, you can really see how incredibly difficult it is to have a conversation where both people are literally on the same page.
Right. You know, it is. Yeah. Pretty tough.
So what I eventually wanted to get to, although I love the way these conversations go, because you never know, but we have some fairly serious issues in the community. I mean, even before COVID, we had some.
Oh yeah.
I would say that that's certainly one, two top ones that I can think of off the bat would be health and affordable housing. That both of those seem to be issues for our community.
Long standing issues.
Yeah, exactly. And I think most of us who have relocated to Brookings in this area, we knew before we came that the health issues were not great. I mean, especially if we came from a larger city that had good health care. We knew theoretically what we were getting into.
Right.
But when it comes, push comes to shove, it's still kind of surprising when.
Yeah. A normal situation that I see, because I'm a contractor and I'm in homes, and so I see a lot of, I meet people retiring here, and they build their dream home, to live out their golden years. They buy a boat and a set of golf clubs, and they're here for 2 or 3 years until one of them gets sick. One of them gets cancer or something, and they're gone. You know, they've got to leave. And it's unfortunate. And you know, on the horizon for medical care, boy, you know, you can remember, what has it been 2 years? Was it 2 years ago now that it was on the ballot for 97415 zip code to join the health district? I think it's been, you know, it's probably been more than 2 years now.
Yeah. I mean, COVID brain here, I'm telling you, everything has morphed together. I cannot remember, but it was in the past.
Yeah. It was a while ago. And our community, you know, we chose not to join the district.
Right.
Which, you know, if you remember, shortly after that vote, shortly after the citizens down here decided not to join, you know, boom, it comes out that Curry Health Network had these financial issues, and suddenly their CFO is, you know, leaving. And so, you know, what chance is it for the next go around? If it comes up again, you know, that's a tough uphill climb for any better medical care around here.
Yeah, I don't think that. I think it would have to be an outside organization that came in that had a reputation for being able to run a good network.
Yeah,
Asante or, you know, Providence or something like that. Because there's not a lot of confidence.
I don't want to forget. I mean, there have been some improvements, at least for us in South County. I mean, years ago, we did get a clinic built down here. You know, a nice new clinic built by a tax paying base that wasn't us, and they built this down here. And then finally, just recently, you know, got it to be an actual emergency room. Right. So, you know, those were steps forward, but it still is just coming up so short, that it's remaining a huge issue here.
Yep. Yep. And our population is older. So,
it is.
You know, that's significant because obviously as you get older, you have, generally speaking, you start to have other health issues that you didn't have when you were younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if I had that one figured out, well, then I would have that one figured out. And
exactly. And yeah. You would probably be known as Saint Jake.
Yeah.
That's right. But, yeah. Yeah.
But I don't.
No. It's been an issue for a long time. And there have been a lot of different kind of attempts to look at it and work with it. And I mean, you can't get away from the fact that the majority of the county's population is in 97415. I mean, right. that's just reality. And to have a hospital 30 miles out of town, 30 miles away from your population, wouldn't be bad if it was a freeway.
But right. Right.
It's Hoosconoggin.
Yeah. Right?
You know, the reality is that, you know, at least once in the wintertime, Hoosconoggin goes down for yep. some period
for
of
something.
Time.
Some yep. period of time.
Yeah.
Impassable. Yeah.
Which makes just getting to a hospital, you know, not possible. I mean, it's, you know, and now obviously with COVID, I mean, that's a whole nother situation because,
yeah.
you know, right? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you look, I know, I keep knocking on wood. I keep knocking on wood all the time, right? We haven't seen it blow up here. We're extremely fortunate that it hasn't. But, you know, for us to be in the kind of shape that New York was in,
oh boy.
Right?
Yeah.
Running out of rooms, running out of morgues, running out of, yeah, it's a little scary.
It is, you know, because our time could still be coming, right?
I know. I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've dodged the bullet so far, and I'm amazed that we have. And we might continue. I mean, it is just stinking possible that we will slip through. I don't know how, but you know, it's a possibility. I just don't think it's likely.
Well, yeah, probably not likely. Possible though. I mean, since yeah. I've lived here, you know, and especially involved in government, our remoteness always comes up, usually in yeah. negative context, right? But you know, maybe every 100 years or so, it works out being kind of remote and
yeah.
you know,
yeah, exactly.
separated.
Exactly. So the second issue seems to be the whole affordable housing issue, which is a huge problem, which it looks to me like more affects the younger people.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the
for
older
sure.
people. Although,
for sure.
you know, yeah. I'm quite sure that older people who are on limited incomes have a very hard time as well. But any young person who's looking at getting into the position of being able to buy or even afford a decent rental it's pretty bad.
Right. And oftentimes just an impossibility, an insurmountable task to try to find something affordable. So unless you have moved here after selling out of a market that was, you know, quite a bit higher than ours.
Yep. Like California.
But if you grow up here and you're working out in the woods or you're working some service industry job, like a lot of us working are, mm-hmm. you know, the idea of a lot of, you know, even just kind of halfway decent homes being 400,000, 450,000, it's just, it's out of reach.
Completely.
And it's, you know, I understand, I mean, our entire state has a housing crisis. So we're not super unique. But housing, it, this seems like something that could actually be solved. Maybe not solved, but this seems like an issue that could be made better. The most of our homes, so in 97415 zip code, there's about 7,500 habitable units, you know, livable units. Okay. And about a quarter of those were built in the 70s.
Wow.
And about, I think it was like 15 to 20% were built in the 80s, and another 15 to 20% were built in the 90s. So the vast majority of the homes that we have were built in those three decades. And so a lot of them are, you know, they're getting older. And although in my memory, my memory tells me that there were a lot of homes being built here in the early 2000s, but really not. You know, most of our growth happened in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and it's just it's a severe lack of housing. The last housing study that the city did, and this was a few years ago, the need for just affordable units, affordable being some sort of subsidized, you know, subsidized rentals. The immediate need of another, it was a little over 450 units is what the immediate need was for subsidized rentals.
Wow.
You know, that's crazy. That's a lot. Yeah. That's pretty much, you know, that would be kind of, I'm trying to think how many we have now. That would be probably doubling. That'd be doubling what we have now for subsidized housing rental units.
And you'd have to find a place for them, for that to be built.
Yeah.
Right? Because, I mean, you know, it's not like we have unlimited land. There's
no
ocean on one side.
Right. Right.
There's mountains on the other side.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got kind of this narrow strip in between that. So it does mean that it's at a certain point you can't build anymore.
Right. We've got to stretch. We've got to elongate. And most of the undeveloped land that we have in the city is north of us and part of the whole Borax property. Right. So that, you know, looking at large scale development in the future, that is where it would happen, at least for Brookings. And, you know, I was hopeful. Here's another, trying to throw out the timeline on the off the top of my head, but something like a couple years ago. you know, and
know.
You never know,
yeah,
like, is that like 6 or 7 years ago, or was it like 3 months ago? I don't know.
Exactly.
It seems
I'm
like
glad it's not just me.
Well, it was so when Gary Milliman was still city manager, so that would have been like 2 or 3 years ago. We were making headway with some Borax folks and hoping to kind of do a bit of a swap deal with providing some infrastructure if they kind of agreed to set aside a portion of their property out there just for the development of affordable housing. And then, you know, it didn't come to fruition. So unfortunately, you know, things like this, they're solved by building homes, and the people that build homes like to be paid to build homes. And so, and so no matter what, it costs a lot of money, you know, and people only want to develop and build homes if they can make money at it. So something is going to have to happen there. There's going to have to be some collective effort, collective being, you know, government. I mean, that's how we, right. That's how we work collectively. There's going to have to be something.
I know that the Talua did something with affordable housing, and I'm thinking it had something to do with tax credits. I remember having Tim Hoon on and talking to him about this, but they did get it, some tax credits, somehow it worked, is all I know. It worked. And they have, in fact, if you go down 101, you can see off to the, you know, that whole complex that they've put up, which is, you know, quite nice and is specifically meant for their people who don't have enough money to ever really have been able to buy it, you know, on their own.
Yeah, that's been a good project for them.
Yeah, right. It has been. But there's something about that whole tax credit thing, because I remember Jerry Lynn saying, you guys should look into this because it's available to do. So, you know.
There are some things available to do. But I mean, one, remember that's Tribe and in California. So the rules are going to be a bit different there. But I know there are some tools in that toolbox. In fact, I believe David Brock Smith, our state representative, worked on some of that and some avenues there for tax breaks. Mm-hmm. And you know, different things have been tossed around over the years. Everything from you know, the city acquiring the land and that being the avenue to bring the retail price of homes down if the mm-hmm. actual lots were able to be subsidized a bit.
Hmm.
One idea I remember a counselor floating a couple years ago. I mean, it was actually, this was probably like, you know, 6 or 8 years ago.
A few years.
But he brought up the idea of, well, how about a small real estate transaction tax and the proceeds just being in an affordable housing fund? And, you know, you can imagine it is a thought. You can imagine when, you know, in this county, when even the word tax comes up,
I know.
You know,
yeah,
that people gets everyone
under the covers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't want to hear it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But that, you know, that is a possibility. And something that maybe in the future we need to take another look at, you know, cause there are still plenty of housing transactions going on and, you know, to get just a piece, to get a 1% from it or a 0.5% from it, to be able to fund like land acquisition on the part of the city and being able to offer that at a, you know, seriously discounted rate to some developer under some agreement that the homes would be, you know, listed for this amount. So
right. Well, that actually sounds like a pretty good idea just off the top of my head, because if it gets rolled into the sale price, then it probably gets rolled into a loan amount. So it's mm-hmm. not like the buyer is going to be immediately out of pocket.
Correct.
If it got rolled into a loan amount, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that it seems relatively painless, right? Relatively painless.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the gas tax, for instance, I mean, that was brilliant on the part of was it Ron that came up with that idea?
I think Hedenskog was the first one to mention it. And
well,
then it was, you know,
brilliance on his part.
Yeah.
Because it's you don't even notice it.
You don't
think about it. You're getting your tank filled up, you don't even think about it. It just, you know, and And it affects everybody, right? So you're here, I mean, they're paying it too, which goes towards improving the roads. I mean, it was a brilliant idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a winner. Definitely a winner. You know, we're all paying a little less on our water bill, and mm-hmm. we're actually receiving about twice as much in funding to actually work on our roads, you know. Right. So definitely a winner.
Yeah, I've seen roads that I had pretty much given up on, that they were ever going to get fixed.
Yeah. There's still some. There's still some around.
Oh, believe me, I know. There's one right down the road. Yes, yeah. I know. Roland Lane has a few issues.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
But you know, what I learned when I was doing a video for the city about this, and what I learned is that the city can't just upgrade the roads, because the sidewalks have to be tied into that as well. And for the sidewalks to get tied in, they have to be ADA compliant.
Yeah.
So it's not a simple deal at all. You know,
no.
Some of the sidewalks are maybe a foot wide, right? And
right.
to be ADA compliant, they need to be like 3 feet wide. So it's not, I think we, those of us who are not involved in all of the processes really don't understand how much, how complicated it all is.
Well, and you know, you don't want to make a new, beautiful, sidewalk, curb, gutter, nice paved street, and then, you know, 2 years later, I have to dig it up to fix a water main underneath of it. So,
yep.
You know, so those things, you know, then you're talking about serious money. So those things usually need to kind of work in tandem, and
railroad. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they did so much, but it did have to be in tandem. You know, everything had to happen like clockwork with the sewers and the water mains and all of that stuff at the same time.
Yeah. But it's nice. It's nice making headway, you know, and the city is actually gaining ground on it. And you know, thank you to the voters for passing that gas tax. That was a big one.
Yeah, it is a big one. It's great. If we could find more ways like that, you know, you just don't even notice it really, you know, it's just part of living.
Yeah.
That, it has to be painless. I mean, that really is the bottom line. It has to be painless. So you have to find a way that nobody even notices. Right? Not really sure how to do that, but exactly. So, you know, we've got a affordable housing crisis and, you know, all of that stuff, but that also kind of a tangential issue is our unhoused population. You know, the people who literally have no homes. And there are a lot of people here who are right on the edge of not having enough to be able to stay in their home, or they had a serious illness and they're no longer in a home. I mean, it's so kind of knife's edge for a lot of people.
For a lot of us. Yeah. And I, you know, I'm personally not in too much different of a situation than that. I mean, it wouldn't take me long if I got hurt and couldn't work for just a matter of maybe a month, you know. I mean, I'd be putting my tent up right next to the other guy.
And then they'd have to roust you.
And then they'd have to roust me out. And it would be on YouTube. I'd make a good YouTube video.
Exactly. It would be great.
But no, it's definitely the reality that a lot of us are in.
Yeah. I mean, I heard a figure last year sometime, I think, that 60% of our school children qualified for a free lunch. that's the level of economic instability, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just, I can't imagine children going hungry. It's like, whoa, it's so wrong. It's just,
it's something so that really, it shouldn't really even be in the picture for us in this country. Right. I mean, it shouldn't be something we need to talk about. The idea of children being hungry should just be off the table.
Right. Right. I mean, whatever,
but the reality,
it, right?
Of it, though,
whatever
is,
it takes,
yeah, whatever yeah. it takes, whatever yeah. it takes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what kind of an unhoused problem do you think we have here? Like how bad are we?
How bad are we? Well, for the people that are unhoused, it's pretty stinking bad.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of us, even though that, you know, yeah, we drive through town and we can quote, see it, you know, we can see those people. But you know, at the end of the day, we go home in our house and they're still out there. So, yep. I think it's a serious issue. It has become, much more serious in the last decade. Seriousness meaning just the numbers of unhoused folks here. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten worse and getting worse, and there's no reason for me to believe that it's going to necessarily get any better as far as mm-hmm. people being able to afford to be in a home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at what point do we as a community kind of come to grips with that and realize that something actually needs to be done, and that it doesn't just work just to drive by and just out of sight, out of mind. We just want them to leave town or whatever that is. At some point we are going to have to deal with it and kind of own up to it. That's my opinion. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I think that's accurate. I don't think we can keep kicking that can down the road. I just, you know, it's not going to kick much farther. It just isn't. But aren't there a lot of people who are actually community members? I mean, from what I've heard, there's a substantial number of the unhoused are community members who have fallen on bad times and can't afford
they're,
a home.
They're ours. They're our folks, right? And there are a lot
of
them.
Well, that makes a difference, though, doesn't it? I mean,
I think it should.
Yes, I think it should too. I mean, you know, you can say theoretically everybody is our folks, you know, kind of thing. But the reality is, if they've been in the community and they were part of the community, and now they don't have any place to live, they're still part of our community. Yeah. You can't just like pretend they don't exist.
Right. No, and when I say ours, I'm talking about, you know, we have people that like were born here and they went to school here. They have worked here in this area. This is where they've spent their life, and they're living on the street or in the woods. You know, they are truly part of our community, and they're living on the street.
Yeah, it just seems so wrong. You know, it seems so wrong. I mean, we have something like a Chetco Bar fire, and there's this massive unity in the community, you know, to take care of the people who are being impacted by the Chetco Bar fire.
Right.
Well, you know, this is not nearly as dramatic, I suppose, although it certainly is for the people who don't have a home. But, you know, they're still our folks. They're still our people that need help.
Well, and they're people that likely a lot of them have made some bad choices in their life, and haven't done things, you know, perfectly. So some of their life's issues or life problems are somewhat self-inflicted. But you know, how many of us How many of us can say that we've done it all right? You know, I've made mistakes in my life that if it wasn't for my wife or it wasn't for my family, you know, my life could have taken an incredibly different path.
Bad turn.
An incredibly different path. And and I'd be getting rousted out from underneath the bridge, you know.
Yep.
And there's not much difference between you and I and those people living on the street.
Nope. Just an accident of fate, really. I mean, I too have been in situations that I got myself into. I mean, I'll own it. I got myself into those situations. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Poor judgment, you know, naivete, whatever. But it doesn't seem like a poor decision or even a series of poor decisions should mean that you spend the rest of your life poor, unable to be in a normal living situation. I mean, that's a little harsh, I think.
Yeah. You know? It's so hard now. It's so hard to get back up when you've been knocked down now.
Yeah.
It's pretty stinking tough to gain any ground when you're already in a hole. Even, you know, those of us that aren't homeless or whatever, we've still dealt with things just like this. I can remember trying to get documentation, trying to get a birth certificate for one of my kids that we didn't have. And it's just the paper trail and trying to get somewhere, is incredibly difficult. And so just imagine if you're on the street and, you know, you have no birth certificate, you don't have a social security card, you have fines that are accruing up the wazoo, and you're supposed to be able to kind of, you know, pick yourself up out of that. It's not always super realistic.
Take a shower
in
a home you don't have, right? I mean, it's like how do you even begin that?
Yeah. How do you? And we expect you to look and act like all of us do that have a shower and have a home and
exactly.
You know,
we expect decent manners from you.
Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I live in the woods. What do you mean?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. We were chatting about this the other day. That's right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. How do you have, you know, finishing school etiquette if you've been living in the woods? Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. It's and I think that, you know, the reality is that COVID has made this all of this so much worse. I mean, it's impacted the healthcare, it's impacted affordable housing because people are afraid. And of course it's impacting the people who don't have a home. I mean, it's just,
it's touched everything. It's touched everyone and everything, and definitely just put, you know, how are we going to go about fixing some of these issues with this whole COVID thing going on?
I know.
You know, this black cloud hanging over everything.
Yeah.
How are we going to operate?
How do we do it? And especially because it's, you know, it's a brand new virus and there's so much we don't know about it still, you know? So we're trying to beat it at the same time as we're learning about it. It's
right.
We're in a very interesting position. Interesting as in the Chinese curse. Interesting. So, Jake, guess what? We're just about out of time. I know. Isn't that amazing how fast that went?
Yeah.
And we didn't get to half of the stuff I wanted to talk about. So I guess we're just going to have to do
that's
it the
all
next
right.
time.
We got lots of weeks.
I know. I love it. One of the things that I do want to touch on, hopefully next week, is that there seem to be two kind of different mindsets in this country, kind of the independent, gung-ho, intrepid explorer kind of thing, And then the community minded, what's good for the whole is more important than what's good, you know, kind of the Spock thing, you know,
yeah,
good for the whole instead of the individual. So
yeah,
let's think about that and, you know, maybe get into that next time.
That'll be a good one. That's a tough one.
Interesting. I know. But there we go, right?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, we can do it.
All right. Well, Jake, you know, once again, I want to thank you so much for being willing to do this. And, you know, this was another great conversation. And I'm thrilled. If people want to watch your chats on Facebook, when do you do those?
I do Tuesday, Thursday, and Sundays at 6 o'clock.
Perfect.
And I usually just go about a half hour, maybe over sometimes, mm-hmm. maybe under other times, but
great.
Yeah, it's just an easy deal.
Perfect. Thank you. And KCIW runs those chats the next day. So we try to run it at midnight and then 5 p.m. of the following day. So I want to thank the listeners for tuning in. Jake and I are going to be doing these weekly, and it's our hope that you'll find some value here and begin the slow process of building some bridges of your own. If you have questions or issues you'd like to hear discussed, drop me an email at contact@kciw.org. You can see the weekly schedule of shows and listen to podcasts there as well. And if you feel like joining our team of volunteers, there's always lots to do, both in front of and behind the mic. So we'll see you next time. For Building Bridges, I'm Candace Michelle.